a lot of the narrative around healthcare reform was like, you shouldn't have to like lose your house because you get sick. But, you know, for a lot of the lower income communities, you know, what house are you talking about? The bank already took it, right?
Hey, welcome to In the Thick, a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, hosting solo this week, while my co-host Maria Hinojosa is in the Caribbean writing. Joining me is Callie Crosley, the host of Under the Radar on WGBH Radio in Boston. Callie, I'm so excited to have you. I've been on your show as a guest. Now you're a guest on my show. Hey, Callie.
I'm thrilled, Julio. What up?
What's happening? This is awesome. Yeah. And joining us from Washington, D.C. is Cincy Hernandez-Cancio, Director of Health Equity at Families USA, a nonprofit, nonpartisan health advocacy organization. Welcome. Bienvenida, Cincy. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for inviting me. This is my first podcast ever, so I'm excited.
Oh, wow.
Well, you are in good hands with two podcast veterans, let's hope. Let's start this week off with our old friend, Representative Steve King from Iowa. You know, the guy who said this in July. He goes, "This whole white people business does get a little tired, Charlie."
I mean, I'd ask you to go back through history and figure out, where did any other subgroup of people contribute more to civilization?
Than white people?
Than Western civilization itself, that's rooted in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and the United States of America.
Well, Steve King is at it again, and he tweeted this on Sunday morning. "Demographics are our destiny. We can't restore our civilization with somebody else's babies." Charles Pierce, who's the Esquire writer that King was talking to in that first quote, called this tweet the most blatantly racist statement from a member of Congress in 50 years. Callie, the question I'm going to ask you, did Steve King go too far?
For real? Are you going to ask me that? And let me quote all my friends now who refuse to listen to news. "I can't," they say. "I just can't." You know, I read this and I said to myself, are you kidding? So clearly he's not at all concerned about any kind of blowback. He feels very confident that he has found his space, his people, and his support out there in the world. What I'd like to see and what I keep calling for and don't see enough of, I see a little bit, but not enough of, I'd like to see some of his peers say to him out loud in public, you know what? This is not okay.
Even if they did, the weird thing about this, like, 24 hours later, he doubled down.
What did you mean?
Well, of course, I meant exactly what I said, as it always is the case, Chris. And to expand on that a little further, I've been to Europe and I've spoken on this issue. And I've said to them, you cannot rebuild your civilization with somebody else's babies. You've got to keep your birth rate up, and that you need to teach your children your values. And in doing so, then you can grow your population and you can strengthen your culture. You can strengthen your way of life.
Who's somebody else's babies?
Cincy, what do you think of all the Stephen King and just the craziness of this?
I think it's very typical of a lot of the rhetoric that we've been hearing. And it also belies a complete lack of understanding of what the future workforce is going to be. And people might remember that 2011 was the first year that we had more minority babies born than white babies.
Oh, don't tell that to Steve King.
Yeah. The kindergarten demographics shifted already.
Right.
So we don't have to wait for 2050. Already there are kids of color that are in the majority in kindergartens across this country.
We keep hearing about, you know, white nationalism taking over the White House. But now we have a representative from Iowa who's, there's no other way to read this than white nationalism.
That's correct.
I mean, so this is so blatant.
Well, he comes from a state that has, the population is overwhelmingly white. However, as I'm sure Cincy would agree, there's a lot of folks of color in Iowa, and that population is growing. I'd like to let him know that.
Yep.
So he needs to, you know, get with the program on that. He's living in some 1940s, 1930s reality, and I guess he's been able to create his reality up to this point. But again, I have to say to you, it's really important in times like this, when somebody is a public figure, as a member of Congress representing everybody, there ought to be his fellow folks saying, this is not acceptable. This is not okay.
I wanted to go back a moment to like one of the true things that he actually said in that quote, which is demographics is destiny. And so the other piece of that is the silver tsunami. Mm. So if you think about the aging, and this is where we're seeing, it's not just a racial divide,
that's
but
right,
also an age divide. If you see the aging of a predominantly white population, who do they think is actually going to take care of them? financially, like who, again, who's going to pay into the tax base, who is going to pay into Social Security, who is going to pay into Medicare, but also who is literally going to be there in the nursing home or in the home care changing their diapers, because sure isn't their kids, right? Because they don't do that. They're off somewhere else.
And what was the silver tsunami for people that have never heard that before?
There are two huge demographic changes happening in America right now. One is what we already alluded to, and it's what some people call the browning of America, or the fact that we're going to become a majority minority nation. And actually, there are some states that are already majority minority. We can't forget that either. But also the other one is the aging. Mm-hmm. So the baby boomers are now aging, getting into what they call, you know, that's what they call them, silver, because they're, you know, salt and pepper, nice looking hair. And it's going to be this wave. It is this wave. That's what they call the tsunami, a wave of basically aging people who are going to need help. Right. And with the way that the United States, the geographical movement in the nation is, people don't live, you know, the way, you know, you and I grew up in Puerto Rico, where you have all the generations living like within, you know, five blocks of each other, right, and they're all taking care of each other, right? That's not the reality in the United States. You're talking about a very mobile population, and also a population where women actually have jobs outside of the home. So it used to be there was always like some woman taking care of babies and old people, and that's not the way it is anymore. So who do they think is going to take care of them?
Now let's move on to our main topic today, which is a very light topic for everyone out there.
All right.
Healthcare. We're going to talk about the details of Trump's new plan, right? Because they're important. But before we do, I just need to say like this. It's like, what is going on again? I mean, people are talking about this as if it's some intricate like policy debate. I feel like the media is losing the forest for the trees. We're talking about seriously messing up people's healthcare again. So, Callie, have we become desensitized to this?
Yes. What has happened, because everything's become so politicized and we're so divided as a nation, is that any moment, any comment is now a political statement. That is the way that we tend to go first to see what is the political impact before you step back to say, wow, look what's happening to all these people. Now, what allowed it not to happen universally are those people that have been flocking to those town halls, giving themselves as examples, using real world scenarios to say, as one I saw one say to Representative Cotton, Tom Cotton, and as you know, he's somebody who's pushing back against this latest effort. Say to him, I'm going to tell you exactly what my husband and I get. $29. This is what we need. This is the difference for us between making it and not making it every month. Can you stand on that stage, Tom Cotton, she said to him, and tell me we are not going to lose this $29. And he said something, and she said, you did not answer my question.
My husband with dementia, Alzheimer's, and plus multiple other things. And you want to stand there with him at home, expect us to be calm, cool, and collective. Wow, what kind of insurance do you have?
So the people are pushing themselves in front with their stories, their real life stories, right, to let people know this is what the policy looks like and this is what it means.
What Republicans are trying to do is, you know, fix something that was broken. But what they're doing is supposedly fixing something might be broken by tearing down everything that there is and actually not replacing it, actually not providing something that is better than what was there before.
Right.
And making sure that we have the face that it's, you know, human beings, it's people. You know, a lot of the narrative around healthcare reform was like, you know, you shouldn't have to go bankrupt because you get sick. You shouldn't have to like lose your house because you get sick. But, you know, for a lot of the lower income communities, you know, what house are you talking about? The bank already took it, right? What savings are you going to wipe out? I don't have any. I wish I had savings. What ends up happening is that people die.
Just to get our bearings, let's look back at healthcare over the last few years. Cincy, in health outcomes between white people and people of color, like, wow, how different are they?
They are very different. One of the things that's very clear is that if you compare outcomes between different groups and white people, you're going to end up with, you know, much higher risks of especially serious diseases like cancer and chronic diseases like, you know, hypertension and diabetes and so forth. And it's a double whammy. You get more likely to have an illness. And then when you get it, you are end up much, much worse.
Because it's the access to care.
Access to care is only, you know, it's a very important part of it. But Has a lot to do with things that aren't even in the healthcare system, what in some places are called social determinants. So if you think about it more simply, you know, where you live, where you play, where you pray, where you work, and where you learn have a lot of effects on your health. You know, there's huge problem with asthma in African American and Latino communities, and especially in Puerto Rico, among Puerto Rican kids. You can actually go to the doctor and get all the inhalers that you are prescribed, and assuming that you have insurance and it will be covered. If you're going back home and you're allergic to things around you, and you have no ability to have an air filter, and you live in an apartment that's, you know, not high quality, and you have an infestation, let's say, of cockroaches because you're just in a low income area, and the slumlord doesn't want to take care of the building. If you're going to a school that's crumbling apart, mm-hmm. you know, there are all these other things that are outside of the healthcare space that are going to continue to make you sick. And a lot of that aligns very much, since we are still a very racially segregated country, despite what people want to believe. These risks to your health are very concentrated in a lot of minority communities.
You're likely to be in a community where there are maybe a lot of buses just idling. Just think about buses idling and pollutants in the neighborhood, just as Cincy was saying. I mean, what many people have said, much smarter than me, that poverty really is the biggest determinant about, you know, how healthy you will be. And that's been determined over and over and over again. And even sometimes in communities of color, when folks have money, they still are not presented with all of the options. Duke University did a study many years ago that determined that folks of color were never offered the specialists, people with insurance. So now just
like
go down.
Yeah.
Go down a few steps and imagine then what happens if you don't have insurance or you don't have access. It becomes worse. There's just a lot of stuff going on that overlaps.
Two things. One is that poverty is much more concentrated in minority neighborhoods. So, for example, if you're a black kid in a poor neighborhood, you're going to be around a lot of poverty. But the same level of income in a white kid, you're in a more mixed neighborhood. So maybe your school won't be as bad, or maybe your environment won't be as bad. So there are some things that are protective in white poverty that don't always exist in poverty in other colors. The other thing is the toxic stress of racism, right? So, you know, this has been described by some really smart people about, you know, imagine post-traumatic stress without the post. If you are constantly in this state of stress because of whether it's violence, whether it's, you know, just the stress of being poor, and it's also the stress of having to deal with discrimination every day, then that is also going to have an effect on your health overall. And that's been well proven.
Right.
There's been wonderful studies about how, well, not wonderful in that they're well done, terrible because of the consequences, that the more adverse childhood events that happen to you when you're a kid, whether it's like, you know, losing a parent or being poor or being hungry, those kind of things, the more likely you're going to be sick as an adult. And not just, I'm not talking about mental illness, just physically sick as an adult.
There was a study done recently about kids in African-American kids and just the potential threat of violence, that their level of stress was higher than some war veterans at certain ages. I mean, you know, that is crazy. So then let's remove the low income status and move up to folks who have, let's say, made it out of the hood, doing okay.
Everyone that's left Donald Trump's
all the people in Blackish, okay? All right. All the people in Blackish doing really well, right?
Okay.
Yet they still are walking around because your body has this whole fight and flight situation where your body primes to recognize stress and to cope with it. But what if you're at a heightened state and it never goes down, really? It sort of stays at in a lateral position.
Or looking in the Latino community, how about the stress of, you know, even in, like, you know, nicer suburbs where we live here in the suburbs of D.C., you know, having my 10-year-old come and say, I have friends in school that are telling me that they're probably going to have to move because, you know, their parents are afraid they're going to be sent away.
Yes.
Right? Fifth grade. I mean, this is the level of stress that's happening right now.
It's happening with my two suburban teenage, you know, not fully Puerto Rican. Like, they are like, you know, multi, you know, Irish, Italian, Puerto Rican kids. And we're talking about structural racism and connections with healthcare. And this is how it goes beyond just policy. And you talk about it, the Hispanic paradox or the immigrant paradox. Mm. What does that mean in terms of healthcare?
I am really glad that you corrected that, because it's been known for a long time as a Hispanic paradox, but it really is an immigrant paradox. And basically what that means is that people who are immigrants have much better health and health outcomes than people who live in the States, who are already here.
Right.
And the really sad thing about that is that if you look at how that shifts intergenerationally, with each additional generation that is in the United States, that health advantage starts reducing and reducing and reducing.
Starts to go away.
Yeah.
Steve King's assimilation is making people unhealthy.
Exactly. That is exactly true. Right. There's something apparently extremely hazardous to your health of living in the United States.
Why is that?
Well, I think a lot of it is the way we live in the United States, right? There's a lot of protection in, you know, coming from countries where there is, you know, you're closer to the food and there's exercise and, you know, maybe it's not as polluted and then just having to deal with the daily stress of being in the United States, whether it's because it's so hard to navigate poverty here or whether it's, you know, what we already talked about. You know, the toxicity of the racism, the structural racism in this country, it starts really, really, you know, kind of carving away at people's health.
California Newsreel did either 2 or 3 hour documentary interviewing every world renowned expert on just this question.
Yeah.
Looking at why is it that immigrants who arrive, you know, in better health, even if they had lower economic status elsewhere, then disintegrate, you know, as they are here.
Hey, this is Noam, producer here at In the Thick. If you believe in what we do, bringing underrepresented voices to the national conversation, go to inthethick.org, click on the donate button, and consider supporting us with a monthly gift. And if you like In the Thick, check out Latino USA. It's a radio show and podcast hosted by our own Maria Hinojosa, full of cutting-edge reporting and storytelling about Latino communities. These days, it can feel like you have to pick sides, but life doesn't always work that way. Hear 3 different perspectives from women on abortion and listen to the story of DACA recipient Josue Romero, who was detained and told he'd be deported back to Honduras in days until a mysterious phone call turned things around. Subscribe to Latino USA wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to In the Thick. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, hosting solo this week while my co-host, Maria Hinojosa, is busy writing. I'm joined by Callie Crosley, the host of Under the Radar on WGBH, and Cincy Hernandez-Cancio, director of health equity at Families USA. Let's get back to the conversation. Let's look at the Republican healthcare bill being considered now. It's called the American Healthcare Act. It's not Trump Care. It's not Donald Trump Care. It's not Donald Care. As recently as January, Donald Trump said this.
The president-elect says there will be insurance for everybody when Obamacare is replaced. Those comments coming in an interview with The Washington Post.
And now, the latest news, the Congressional Budget Office report that was released on Monday afternoon, where it estimates that 24 million people would lose their health insurance by the year 2026 under this Trump Care plan.
What's really concerning about the details of this as they are now they could change, is that the impact of this will fall heaviest on older Americans. Now, what do we know about older Americans? They're the ones that need most of the resources.
Right.
They're going to make it easier for younger Americans, presumably to try to get them to, you know, weigh in on it. But no less a person than John Kasich said, please help me understand how a $4,000 tax credit is going to replace what's in the current legislation now and how any person of a certain age could take $4,000 and buy some insurance with it. He said it's laughable.
The thing, though, that's really, really alarming for us in particular and should be very alarming for anybody who cares about Latino or Black health is what they're going beyond just let's repeal Obamacare. They're actually also attacking Medicaid separately. And trying to eliminate what we have right now, which is basically if you are a low-income person, you know, we're talking about, you know, below poverty or near poverty, then, you know, the federal government and your state basically has an agreement to cover your costs of health care, whatever they may be. What the Republicans want to do is like, okay, here's a pot of money. We're going to make sure it doesn't grow as fast as your need. And state, figure out what you want to do with it. And by the way, it's less than what you had before. And if, you know, if there's a financial crisis and suddenly you have all these people unemployed and a lot more people who need care, too bad, that's what you get. And then the worst part about this, it's all about, you know, finding ways to cut taxes for the rich, right?
Right.
So hidden in all of this is, for example, you know, now healthcare executives can have, you know, tax-free, much, much higher bonuses because, you know, that's really what we need to be investing tax dollars in.
The AHCA contains tax cuts worth $600 billion. And according to the Joint Committee on Taxation, these tax cuts would save the top 0.1% Americans almost $200,000 each per year. Is this like a reverse, like, Robin Hood thing going on here?
No, this, now this is politics 101. Okay. This is exactly Callie, feeding yeah. your corporate base or your rich, in this case, your rich people's base that you feel are the folks that are going to mean something for you down the road, President Trump. And so I'm going to take care of them. I promised them I would take care of them. That's my number one concern. And how I get it done. You know, we're going to have to trim from someplace. Oh, and as Cincy said, oh, well, too bad it's you poor people or the rest of us, the rest of the middle income. I mean, I did a commentary a couple weeks ago about, you know, other kinds of cuts that the president has made in his executive orders that are just mean. They have nothing to do with rich people, actually. They are targeted at low income and middle income.
Give me an example.
So the very first executive order that this president signed into law 1 hour after inauguration was one that reduced the mortgage benefit for middle income and low income folks, period. Nobody else would benefit. Now, help me understand. These are your peeps. These are the ones that you said are the ones I care about, that I'm taking care of you. You're the voiceless. I'm your voice. 1 hour after you left the inauguration stage, that was the first executive order. Not immigration, not health care. Reducing a benefit. And there's more and more of that. So my point is this. It's really morally corrupt at some point. I mean, there are rich people saying, hey, we don't need any more cuts. You know, just slow your roll a minute and let's make sure that,
slow your roll, you
know, that some people get taken care of, that folks get taken care of.
Yeah.
So I don't know where his pledge was to help everybody, but they're not going to be helped by this. There's the money is coming from someplace.
When we're talking about people's health, like how does that become partisan?
It becomes partisan in how you decide you're going to do it. Let me just say, and since it can, I know, add to this, states have never been a friend of people of color in terms of distributing monies for either folks who are in need from a poverty standpoint or an income standpoint, or certainly from a health care. So just listening to Cincy describe how little money was going to come back and then that the states would be in control right away. What did you say earlier, Cincy? You said people are going to die. Didn't you say that?
Yep, that's exactly okay. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, on the one hand, I think you're right about like states not necessarily always being the friend of people of color. But at the same time, you know, some of the most interesting pushback is happening right now is coming from governor's offices.
Yes.
Because the thing that people don't understand is that in the globalized economy that we have right now, healthcare is one of the biggest drivers of economic and job growth right now. Right. Because, you know, we don't have robot nurses yet. Right. You can't like take care of people in a hospital through a call center. So you have to actually have human beings working in locations to take care of people.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we saw with the Medicaid expansion, for example, which was, you know, making Medicaid available to more people, you know, not all the states took it on, but those that did saw economic growth. And we all know, like, more if we think about it, you know, seeing some of the issues that have happened around, let's say, hospitals that are closing down, you know, usually that hospital is like the main engine of jobs and the economy locally. And so it ends up being a real problem. And one of the things that's a lot of people don't realize is, you know, there's, you know, friend to the rural people, right? That was one of supposedly the constituencies that was more, you know, in favor of Trump. Well, there have been rural hospital closings happening at a grand scale across the country. And when those go, that's, you know, it's not only a problem for the economy, but if you have a heart attack and the closest hospital is an hour and a half away, you're going to die.
Let's move on to our final segment, Mic Drop. This is the segment where guests get to choose from a list of options for their final word. You say your piece, then you drop the mic. So we've got five options. Fantasy CNN, what's missing, tough questions, mea culpa, and side eye. Callie, let's start with you.
You know I have to go for side eye. Come on.
Callie, side eye Crosby, go.
Come on. You know, this is under the heading of, are you kidding me? So this guy, they believe him to be a Wall Street banker, decided that he would hump the statue of a young girl.
Oh my God,
that was installed in the on Wall Street. You know, much press given to this statue of the young girl standing called Fearless. And
yes,
she's standing with her hands on her hip and looking, you know, strong and powerful. And folks are flocking down there to take pictures. It happened on International Women's Day. It appeared. Mm-hmm. They did it overnight. This is Women's History Month. So much great, great positive feeling about it. Lots of opportunity for folks who supported that, and also the artist, the woman artist that who crafted the statue, to talk about the meaning of it, why it was important on Wall Street, particularly to have a fearless young girl who will grow into a fearless woman, and, you know, all of that good stuff. And so just because this guy thought he'd be clever, he decided to hump the statue. And not only did he decide to hump the statue, some of the eyewitnesses thought it was so funny and laughed. So fortunately, there has been a big backlash, and that has
gone.
Fortunately,
someone took a picture in the internet.
You know, you couldn't get more side-eyed than
this.
I know.
Seriously. Cincy, what do you got?
What we missed this week?
Yeah, go for it.
So one of the things that I think is flying under the radar that we really have to pay attention to is the uptick in violence against trans people right
yes.
now. You know, there's obviously been a lot of coverage around. There's so much more violence in general, racist violence, you know, anti-Muslim violence, you know, the recent, you know, anti-Jewish violence has been happening as well. Just a few days ago here in D.C., a very well-known Latina trans woman, Ruby Corralo, who has Casa Ruby here, which is an LGBT center for youth.
I know, yep.
They were vandalized. One of their workers was hit in the face. And this is, I think, the third incident of vandalism against them in a couple of weeks. You know, murders of trans women of color in particular this year have jumped up a lot. And I think it's really important. I know maybe it's also because of the connection to all the Boricuas in Orlando and all that they went through last year.
At the Pulse shooting, yeah.
Yeah, we need to make sure that we are raising the alarm. And it's hard because there's so many alarms to be raised, right?
Yeah.
But we have to. We really can't forget these folks.
I don't know how I'm going to follow up, but I'm going for it. And this is also what's missing. This week, the most important story in the history of modern Puerto Rico happened.
Oh, my gosh.
The Fiscal Control Board.
Oh, right.
In Wall Street decided to finalize the fiscal plan by the government of Puerto Rico, which leads to massive cuts to the University of Puerto Rico. We're talking $450 million. And I felt it was choreographed because here they are. Everyone's talking in English. The Puerto Rican government is presenting its class report, and everyone, it's the biggest love fest going. They're like, you're doing such a great job, Governor of Puerto Rico, all these austerity measures and the fact that you're basically gutting all these services, and we're going to try to innovate the economy. You know what they want to innovate the economy with, guys?
What?
Tourism. We've done this rodeo before, people. The future of Puerto Rico is going to be one massive, all-inclusive, five-star, for-the-rich industry where minimum-wage Puerto Ricans who are trying to get their jobs are going to be working in hotels and in these, like, five-star places. 3.5 million American citizens they're going through some tough times.
Uno, dos, tres!
Callie Crosley, the host of Under the Radar on WGBH, and Cincy Hernandez-Gancio, director of Health Equity at Families USA. Thank you so much for joining me on In the Thick.
Thank you. I was glad to be here.
Thank you. This was super fun.
I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. And if you're interested in more details on the basics of the Affordable Care Act, check out this week's episode of Decode DC. They're friends of In the Thick, and their episode this week is a great primer on everything you should know about the ACA. And remember, go to iTunes to rate and review us. It really helps. Trust me. Follow us on Twitter at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook, and we're also on Instagram at In the Thick Show. And tell your friends. Our producer is Noam Hassenfeld. Our senior editor is Nadia Raymond. Our theme music is Comencemos by Jungle Fire. Some of our music is composed by Noam, and the other music you heard is courtesy of Nacional, Kept, and ZZK Records. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. Nos vemos. There's a lot of Latinos in Iowa.
Hello. And there's some black folks, too.
There are some Puerto Ricans in Iowa. I've met them.